Moonflower by Magnolia 35. Summary. Hob has to do a double take because Dream is crying. Big, ugly, hiccuping sobs that rack his skeletal frame to the point where Dream looks like a leaf in the wind. The raven that had been following the man the last time they met, Mike or Martin or Matthew or something, pecks at the guy's shoes. The story of how Hob Gadling starts a pub, beats up a god, stares down death, falls in love with Dream of the Endless, and amasses a small army of fidget cubes. Not necessarily in that order. On July 31st, 1989, Robert Gadling, then Goldberg, liquidates his remaining assets under the name Goldberg and uses them to buy one of the hedgerow houses not too far from the White Horse Tavern. He begs it off to whoever asks as needing a change of scenery, and waves off the fact that the only greenery is a turf of yellowing grass outside, and the interior is hideously decorated, even by Hob's standards. Hob soon discovers that he has no idea what he's doing. Printmaking, investment, soldiering? Done, done, and done. Starting a pub? He doesn't know shit. The grass outside is trampled by kids every other day, and the decor remains a mixture of eye-blistering orange and animal print. "This better be worth it, you complete and utter bastard," he mutters, not for the first time, as he reviews yet another stack of insurance papers he has yet to fill out. Apparently he's a freeholder pub, whatever the bloody hell that means, and he has to negotiate with his own suppliers. It could have been easier to sit back and make his friend come to find him, but Hob has nothing but time and money these days, and, well, he's always liked a challenge. He does, however, need staff. "Say," Hob says, sliding across the bar of the White Horse Tavern to where the aged bartender is busying himself with polishing glasses, "you wouldn't be interested in a job, would you? I mean, what are you planning to do after this place closes down?" The bartender eyes him shrewdly.
"Figured I retire. I suppose it depends on what the job offering is."
Hob grins. "Bartending. Double whatever pay you get in here, and as much leave as you want. And free booze."
"Triple pay. And I get to have word on the stockage."
"Done." The man blinks.
"Wasn't actually expecting that to work. Double would have been more than fine."
Hob claps him on the back. "Welcome to the business. Tell me, what's your name?"
"Murray. And yours?"
"Robert. But you can call me Hob."
"And who else is in this business of ours?"
Hob scratches the back of his neck. "I'm working on that. So far as you and me. I don't suppose you know anybody in the interior renovations business. Or the pub managing business? Is that a thing?" Murray peers at him.
"You've no idea what you're doing, do you?"
"It's not a question." Hob still answers it like one. "Nope. But I've got money to spare and plenty of years of experience under my belt. Just not quite sure where to start."
"Well,"
Murray says, still looking like he's not sure whether Hob is stringing him along.
"An inn needs a name, doesn't it? Can't exactly call it the New Inn, can you?"
They call it the New Inn. They pry up the stick on marbling to find lacquered hardwood underneath, and Hob decorates the fencing outside the old inn with signs pointing all the way towards the new inn. "Just in case my friend tries to come and find me," Hob explains to Murray, who looks at him, claps him on the shoulder, and has the air of someone who knows far more than Hob does, despite the fact that Hob is hundreds of years old. The old bastard winks at him in that way of his, and Hob flicks him the finger, and they both dip their glasses together in celebration of their new old inn. They throw Murray a retirement party a decade later, where Murray proudly introduces his grandson, who is also named Murray, who he intends to have as his replacement. The new inn doesn't really change. Murray's one and two were the ones who actually took care of customers while Hob footed the bill, so while the faces of the customers cycle through, and the music cycles with them, the general air of the place remains similar to the original inn Hob and his still-nameless friend had first met at all of those years ago. "Don't you want to go to uni?" Hob asks Murray 2.0 at one evening when the customers are steadily trickling out. "Travel? See the world?"
"Nah," Murray the second shrugs. "Plenty to do here, you know? Don't want to get swept up in that corporate rat race."
Fair enough. Hob needs something to fill the time, though, so he goes to university and gets a degree in education. He refuses to teach history. It drives him mad, all those slightly incorrect details in the workbooks, and he can't exactly stand up and say exactly why they're wrong, so he settles on math. Well, he starts out in math, but ends up doing math and arts. None of the high-level stuff, and heavens knows Hob barely has a hand for making masterpieces. But theory? Theory he can do. The few paintings he does do are of starry-eyed strangers, a bar that's been closed down for years, and a dozen dreams crammed into an A4 canvas. It won't be full-time, Hob explains to Marie the second, who didn't ask in the first place but listens anyway. Just substitute work every now and then. Substitute turns to semi-regular teaching aid, and finally to an invitation to take a permanent position at the understaffed, overworked high school 40 minutes down the road. It's not easy work. Hob thanks whoever's watching above for making sure he only asked for a 3-day work week. But it's rewarding. The kids are mostly from low-income families, and pay is often late, and sometimes in the form of baked goods or exchanged piles of marking. But the good, honest work keeps him young. Or so he says to his fellow staff, who aren't paid enough to care about the fact that he hasn't aged in a decade. Hob wonders sometimes about his wayward patron. He knows logically his friend must be out there, somewhere, doing whatever it is handsome strangers who might be fae or gods do. Hob watches a new millennium dawn and tips a cheers towards the night. The bar is loud downstairs, filled to the brim with people kissing and fucking and laughing. Hob retreated upstairs to his sectioned-off area with a bedroom, a kitchen, and a window that faces southwards, and a glass of fine Chardonnay. "To new beginnings, old friend," he says to the night, and the night says nothing back. Hob laughs and throws back the remainder of the glass and returns to the people. Elsewhere, an immortal waits in a glass prison, unmoving and still. A handsome stranger walks into the new inn clad in black, and Hob is brought back to 133 years ago, and 100 years before that, and before that, and before that. He's alive. Which, yes, was technically never in doubt, but he's alive! "You're late. 33 years late," Hob doesn't say, because his friend is back. And looks like shit, but hey, Hob's looked a dozen times worse and heard no comments. And seems to want to continually associate with Hob. "It seems I owe you an apology," the stranger says with a crooked smile, and Hob can count the amount of times he's seen the being smile on one hand with fingers to spare. "I've always heard it impolite to keep one's friends waiting." Hob barks out a laugh. "No shit! I figured after our last meeting I'd scared you off for good." The stranger's face shudders off, withdrawing into himself. "I was otherwise unavailable, I'm afraid. Rest assured, if it had been up to me, I would not have missed our meeting, Hob Gadling." Touchy subject. "Water under the bridge," Hob concedes easily. "So, how do you like it?"
"Like it?
The pub," Hob elaborates. "Started it myself after the old place closed down." His friend tilts his head slightly.
"This is your establishment."
Hob smiles. "Since 1989. Couldn't have you try to find me with only a closed down inn to base off of."
"I would have been able to find you anyways," his friend mutters.
"Are you going to tell me how?"
"No."
"Then it's good I started the new inn so you don't have to give away all your secrets, hmm?" The blatant statement earns him the smallest of smiles, which Hobbs takes as a victory by miles.
"My name is Dream. Or Morpheus, I suppose. Take your pick."
"Two names in a night? Hobbs a lucky man." "Dream, then. Unless you have a preference." Dream shakes his head.
"I have none."
"Any reason for the sudden willingness to share?"
"I've heard after 600 years, it does tend to be customary friends should know each other's names,"
Dream says wryly, which is a joke? "That's an awful joke," Hob says flatly. "Absolutely terrible. 600 years I've waited, and that's what you come up with. Perhaps you truly are the devil." Dream looks at him quizzically.
"Are you?"
Hob smiles. "I jest, my friend.
I'm relatively sure you aren't the devil.
Only relatively. My Lucifer would be practically insulted.
I can't tell if you're joking or not, and I don't think I want to know. They talk into the night. Hob talks about his students and movies dream. Have you ever seen a movie? And tries to fit everything new from the past century into a few hours of talk. They only stop when the rain starts pouring down outside, an evening shower.
I do enjoy our talks, Hob Gadling,
Dream says almost wistfully as they linger by the door. Hob, because he's never possessed an ounce of tact in his life, goes all in. Our next meeting doesn't have to be 100 years, you know. I'm here most days. I have a flat upstairs. I'd live somewhere else, but London rates are absolutely criminal, you see.
I see.
A polite smile belies how Hob can tell Dream does not, in fact, understand. It's sweet he tried anyways. Just keep it in mind, Hob instructs as he and Dream walk out the door. Is that one of yours? He asks, looking up to watch a particularly tame-looking raven studying them with beady eyes. Dream sighs long and hard as he walks its way over.
Matthew.
The raven, yes, raven, Hob had taken birdwatching a century or two ago and knew his birds well, flies up to perch on Dream's shoulder. Hello, Matthew, Hob greets the bird. It eyes him, clacking its beak. Dream looks vaguely bemused.
I suppose this is goodbye, then.
Dream nods.
It is. But perhaps you shall not have to wait another 100 years to see me again, Hob Gatling.
Good. Hob claps him on the back. No offense, but you are by far one of my better friends.
Only one of.
Hob winks. You'll have to ask me next time. Are you sure you don't need an umbrella for the two of you?
Dream shakes his head. We'll be fine.
He's gone before Hob realizes he should have given the man his number. Was that your friend? Murray the Second asks curiously when Hob wanders back into the bar. Hob's very aware his usual company consists of high school teachers, various bartenders, and the odd student coming to check on how their old teacher's doing after all these years.
The exact same as when they'd last seen him, of course.
A guy who looks like he crawled straight out of one of the supernatural movies his students rave about is not his standard company.
Yeah, Hob beams, warm despite the fact that he's slightly damp from the rain. He is.
The next time he sees his friend, it's pissing down rain, and he's in Hob's backyard of all places. Hob has to do a double take because Dream is crying. Big, ugly, hiccuping sobs that rack his skeletal frame to the point where Dream looks like a leaf in the wind. The raven that had been following the man the last time they'd met, Mike or Martin or Matthew or something, pecks at the guy's shoes.
Are you okay?
Dream? There's no response. Hob's seen a lot over the year. He started out in this mess as a soldier, and that'd been an occupation he's returned to many times over the years. The Great War, the Second Great War, Holy Wars 1 through whatever number they were up to now. He'd seen the worst of humanity and the best. Logically, Dream should have seen all of that shit too, since he'd lived as long, longer, than Hob. Or maybe not. Maybe the man spends his days up in some ivory tower breeding ravens or whatever else immortal deities get up to in their spare time. But what the hell could make a god break down like one of Hob's rookies in the trenches?
Is he okay? Hob asks the raven, feeling a bit like an idiot.
The raven tilts its head at him and then exaggeratedly shakes its head.
Anyone else who'd be better to help?
Another exaggerated shake.
You reckon he'll murder me if I touch him?
The raven caws, eyeing Hob up before proceeding to nestle itself into Dream's hair.
Closest thing he'll get to a yes in this situation.
Feel free to kill me for this, Hob mutters to the immortal, sweeping him into his arms and curling around the longer, lankier man. Dream stills for a moment before falling apart in Hob's arms, all bits of pointed bone and awkward angles clinging to Hob like a lifeline. There's no words from the deity. He's unnaturally quiet between shuddering breaths.
Hob,
he chokes out, breaking off into a low whine.
It's all right, man,
Hob soothes. And of course he's got 1,000 questions. He's human and loves every second of it, no matter how surprised Dream seems every time he repeats his promise of 100 years. But sometimes a man, or God, angel,
whatever thing dream is, needs a break and a good cry. God knows Hobb's done that 1,000 times over with some to spare.
Should I talk to him? Hobb asks the raven.
It nods.
So, Hobb starts, feeling like an utter idiot. My year eights, they're absolutely awful, you see. Like, I know the kids are trying their best, but man, all they draw are terribly rude pictures of me. Actually, some of them would be quite flattering if it weren't for the fact that they were crude enough with the artistic skill to rival that fellow who drew us all those years ago. The one that the Constantine lady tracked us down through? Hell of a woman, that one. Swear I met her great times whatever granddaughter a few years ago, and let me tell you, she is a riot.
Hobb can feel Dream's breathing become more rhythmic as Hobb prattles on about the Constantines and exactly how good his year sevens are at Impressionism. They sit there in the pouring rain as Hobb rubs circles into Dream's back like he did with Robin all those hundreds of years ago whenever he'd get frightened. Only when the sobs wane into steady breathing, sparsely interrupted by hiccups, does Hobb look at his friend. Dream's face is still alabaster pale, but there's a splotchy redness around his eyes and nose.
It's okay, you know, to cry.
Starbright eyes snap to him.
I'm an endless, Dream stresses. Crying is beneath us. I don't even know why I'm doing this.
Hobb shrugs. It's normal. I cry all the time. Does this... Hobb breaks off, not sure if this is too much too fast.
Does this have anything to do with your unavailability?
Silence answers him. Dream seems to tuck himself into himself, which is an answer in itself. They sit there in the rain for what could have been minutes or hours before Dream finally speaks again.
They kept me, Dream raps into the quiet, in a cage of sorts. A creation not dissimilar to your snow globes, made of iron and glass.
Who? Hobb wants to ask. Where?
Can I kill them, or are they already dead? For 100 years,
Dream snarls,
I was in a cage in a basement, and I have just found out that my sibling engineered it to try and teach me some fucking respect.
Oh, shit.
Oh, shit. Now Hobb gets it, because being shot by some random guy in war sucks, but betrayal? That cuts deep. Deeper than deep.
That's fucked up, Hobb says. The raven calls in agreement. He continues on because what the hell do you say to that?
Do you want to go inside? You look...
Hobb purses his lips.
Damp.
Which is an understatement. Dream looks like a drenched cat, all skin and bones and wet hair plastered to his forehead, sullenness written across his face. He looks exhausted in the bone-deep way Hobb would get after years-long campaigns. Plus, it's not like Hobb would mind the company. The bar has late hours, sure, but when it gets late and it's just Hobb and the night, he could kill for anything to distract him from his thoughts. Maybe Dream needed the same courtesy extended to him. The guy didn't strike Hobb as the sort of person with many friends. It speaks to exactly how tired Dream is, that the man doesn't put up a fight and simply dogs Hobb steps up as Hobb shows him the way through the new inn up to his flat. The flat itself is cluttered, shelves filled with age-old books and knick-knacks from across the centuries dotting the shelves. On the coffee table there lies what must be 2 feet of ever-growing paperwork, a mixture of papers that need to be marked, and other documents that need updating, next to a plant Hobb can't remember the name of that constantly encroaches on the paperwork's territory in what must be a never-ending battle.
It's a bit of a mess, Hobb says sheepishly. But you're free to stay the night if you'd like.
I would hate to impose.
Dream breaks off when Matthew nips his ear, absentmindedly swiping up at the bird.
Nah, you're not imposing. Plenty of room to share. I mean, there's only one bed, but I can take the couch or the floor.
Both areas are covered in items that may or may not be important. Dream looks at them pointedly and shrugs with the manner of a being who does, in fact, believe what he's saying.
I'll share.
Do you need any spare clothes, or...
No.
He offers no explanation, already trailing off to where Hob's bedroom is.
You can stay too, if you like, Hob offers to the raven.
It tilts its head at him before taking its leave, off to do whatever magic ravens do. Rob a bank or something. Weirdly, Hob got the vibe that that was an activity this particular raven would be up to doing.
Hob's bedroom is slightly less cluttered than the main area, by which he means the shelves are all full to bursting, whilst the bed itself stands occupied only but by what may be a god in the form of a man.
"Where's Matthew?"
Dream asks, looking terribly small now that he wasn't in his full getup, with way too many layers.
"Off to do raven stuff, I suppose. I'm sure he won't be far if you need him."
Dream says nothing, eyes tracking Hob as he sits down on the bed next to Dream, taking care to unlace his shoes.
"If you need the bathroom or anything, it's through the door to the left. Kitchen's to the right. If you need anything else, just wake me up."
"Thank you," Dream says quietly.
"It's no problem," Hob yawns.
He shrugs off his shirt, flops face down, and is asleep before he realizes he forgot to turn out the light.
Hob dreams of sweet things that night, of pouring rain and a dark figure resting peacefully by his side. Hob wakes up to the warm weight of Dream curled into his side. Almost like a limpet, he notes amusedly as he catalogues the way the elder presses into him in a way that maximizes the amount of skin-to-skin contact.
Do gods even sleep? It probably isn't necessary.
It touches Hob, knowing Dream chose to trust Hob with the man's unconscious body. Sure, they've been friends for centuries, but it's still something. A trust Hob can't quite explain.
Also, Dream's awake now. The man blinks at him, wide-eyed, and lays there for a moment watching Hob.
Hob, for his part, watches right back, tracing the way sunlight crests over Dream's brow and dips into the hollows of his cheeks. He's beautiful, ethereal in a way that lets you know he's just too flawless to be human. And then Dream turns and wipes a hand across his face, humming,
"I have not slept that well in a century."
"From what I'm guessing, you haven't slept at all in a century," Hob says dryly, and immediately feels like shit when Dream retreats into himself, a stony facade slamming up in place.
"Hey," Hob says, feeling like an utter fool. "I'm sorry. Shouldn't have said that." "It's fine," Dream says bitterly. "I should be over it by now anyways."
"How long have you been?"
2 weeks, 3 days, 18 hours, and 16 minutes.
Dream recites dutifully. Which is a thing. Hob stops for a second, turns over the number in his head, does the math again. "You came to see me 3 days after you were free?"
"It would have been rude to keep you waiting longer."
Hob refrains from telling him he needs therapy, because that would be the pot calling the kettle black. He settles on the "you came to visit 3 days after you got out of jail" thing instead. "Didn't you have, like, godly tasks to do?"
"I did those too."
Dream's face turns slightly reproachful.
"Also, my sister told me to visit you, and she unfortunately had a point."
"Your sister?"
"I have 3, and 2 brothers, and a sibling who is neither."
Hob wants to ask why the hell none of them stopped by and did anything, or at least came and told Hob so he could do something, but that seems like a conversation that'd go nowhere. "I'll make you breakfast," Hob settles on, because he can't fix trauma, but he can make food.
"I don't need anything."
"Do you not eat?" Because Hob swears he'd seen Dream eat at least once over the years, though he couldn't tell which century it might have been in. Dream grimaces.
"It is uncomfortable, as of recently."
"That is also a thing. All right. Do you want water or tea or anything?"
"I would not be opposed to water,"
Dream slowly admits, eyes narrowed like Hob's about to take that statement and beat him over the head with it. "Water it is," Hob agrees easily, swiping one of his favorite glasses from where it's drying over the sink. It has cats on it.
It's kind of ugly, but it was half a pound at the corner store and remains one of Hob's best purchases. Dream accepts the glass, fingers tracing over where the cat's paws are interlinked.
I have to leave soon,
Dream says after half the glass is empty. Do you need anything before you go? Dream shakes his head.
Thank you, Hob. Your kindness will not be forgotten.
Hob stops him just before he leaves. Dream? Dream turns to look at Hob, head slightly tilted in wordless acknowledgement. You're welcome any time, Hob says firmly, with a jaunty little two-fingered wave. Dream half raises a hand in response and is gone between one moment and the next. When Hob dreams, Dream is there. Not always physically. Sometimes he can just feel his presence in the same way you can feel the sun even when it's a cloudy day. But Hob knows he does something to make Hob's dreams more pleasant than they used to be. Which, don't get him wrong, is not something Hob objects to at all. Reliving being sunk on a destroyer for the 18th time loses its luster after, well, being sunk on a destroyer isn't really something enjoyable the first time round. The thing is, sometimes things that aren't Hob's dreams leak through. He'll be exploring a cathedral lost to time and trip into a corridor leading to a basement with an orb made of iron and glass, a golden circle surrounding it. The first time, the orb is empty. Intact, but empty. Hob dreams up a sledgehammer and turns it to rubble and ash. The second time, it's not. In fact, the second time, he'd been guided to it by a nightmare creature, something that should have been terrifying with its hulking black frame and scaled hide, but gently nudged Hob from the French village he'd been exploring down to a dark tunnel where a basement lies. Oh, fuck me, Hob says into the silence, eyes wide as moons as he stares at Dream, decidedly naked and in a bubble without air.
Hob, Dream chokes out, rising from where he lays. Hob, you shouldn't be here. They'll take you too. Why didn't you listen? Jessamy, the Corinthian.
All right, Hob says, pretending he's not panicking. How do I get you out? Dream stares at him, pupils blown wide and seemingly unable to speak. The glass seems to get thicker by the moment, almost beginning to take on an opaque tint. Fuck it. Hob guesses. It's still technically his dream. He dreams up what worked last time. Hello, sledgehammer, old friend.
Watch out for glass, Hob warns, and slams the sledgehammer into the lower panes of glass.
Dream watches, flinching each time the sledgehammer makes a dull thud on the glass. When the glass finally does break, it's jagged and just large enough for Dream to be able to step through. The two of them stare at each other, Hob covered in dust and with a sledgehammer in his hand, and Dream staring up at him like Gabriel descended. There's a naked desperation on Dream's face, an expression so heartbroken it's almost human. Hob holds out his hand and Hob wakes up. Dream shows up 2 weeks later at 11:03 p.m. on a Tuesday, which Hob knows because he was in the middle of helping Murray kick a group of idiot kids out of their bar. Dream looks like shit, to be frank, which is why Hob waves Murray over to take care of the customers, whilst Hob takes care of his wayward friend. You look like shit. Dream eyeballs him with the air of a man who's been told this many times recently.
Are you going to impress upon me your opinion?
Hob shrugs.
No, but I am going to offer you a drink. A drink.
I'd be a poor host if I didn't offer a friend a drink. If you tell me why you're here, I won't even make you pay. They both know Hob wouldn't make him pay either way, but it works.
I had a fight, Dream admits after a moment, looking like he wished he'd never showed up at all. With my raven.
With your raven? Hob remembers Matthew, who decidedly didn't talk to Hob. Maybe he was shy. Can ravens be shy?
Yes.
I'm sorry, Hob says, quite honestly, in spite of the fact that he feels way out of his depth. That must have been hard for you and your raven.
Thank you.
Do you want to talk about it?
No.
You want to get drunk?
Hob offers the bottle to Dream, who takes it gingerly.
I don't even know if I can get drunk,
he says, ghosting a finger across the dusted glass.
Even if I can, it has been many years since I have partaken in this particular activity.
Hob shrugs, already reaching for two glasses.
Only one way to find out. Shall we head upstairs?
Dream nods wordlessly, trailing after Hob as he leads the way. Hob pours the first drink. Dream pours the second. He'd ended up grabbing about 6 different types of alcohol. Only the finest for an esteemed guest such as himself, he had declared dramatically, even as his grin betrayed him. Off Murray and letting the man know he was free to close up shop for the night. Alcohol poisoning who? Hob can't die, and he's not even sure if Dream has a liver. Liver or not, turns out Dream can, in fact, get drunk. They're both shit-faced, slumped into Hob's couch, halfway through a bottle of wine, nowhere near as old as either of them.
You're so fidgety, Hob marvels as Dream plays with one of the numerous cubes Hob kept on hand for the odd student.
I like it,
Dream mutters, still utterly engrossed in his task.
I didn't say stop, Hob protests. I think it's cute.
They both studiously ignore the fact that they're blushing. Hob sips on red wine that may or may not be spiked with whatever else they'd brought up, his feet balanced carefully on the side of his couch, and Dream curled into his side.
What was your fight with your bird about?
Dream goes still, placing the fidget cube down where he'd found it.
I was prideful. I refused to let Matthew accompany me, and he perceived it as a slight to his ability to be my raven. I just...
He huffs.
I just don't want to lose him like I did Jessamy.
How'd you lose her? Hob asks softly.
They shot her, Dream says quietly, in front of me. And they left her there until they could be sure I wasn't going to escape.
Oh, that's fucked.
They stew in silence, sipping on the red wine. At some point, Dream picks up the fidget cube again and discovers he can spin it.
If I'd known, Hobbs, it breaks off before continuing. If I'd known, I would have tried to find you. I did, actually, try to find you. Didn't succeed, obviously.
Dream blinks at him.
You tried to find me.
Of course. You're my bloody friend, Dream, and I'm not that shite of a man.
Dream blinks furiously, something he and Hob pretend are not tears lining his eyes.
I didn't realize you would be looking. I'm sorry I didn't look harder. You tried, and that is more than I ever would have asked for.
Did you ever find out how it happened? Your sibling, right?
Dream nods unhappily.
Desire. They and I have never seen eye to eye. They dislike how I've treated them and some of my younger siblings. And this time they nearly had me kill my niece by accident.
How do you accidentally kill your niece?
I didn't know she was my niece at the time. She was a dream vortex with the power to collapse my domain and the universe. And the last time I didn't kill a dream vortex didn't end well.
Dream explains. Hob has no idea what most of that means.
That sucks.
I'm furious,
Dream confesses, still tucked into Hob's side. Hob tries not to think about how he can count every single rib, every notch along his spine.
I'm furious, Dream repeats, and I understand. Because they were right. I haven't treated them, nor despair, nor delirium equally.
Okay. Hob says. But, you know, maybe you guys could have talked it out instead of resorting to murdering your family by proxy. Is that a thing?
Desire never would have talked it out. Their nature is to cause chaos, to encourage humans to indulge in their worst fantasies.
That seems like flawed logic, but sure, why not?
All right, tell me about them.
Dream tilts his head. About who? Desire? Your siblings?
He scowls.
I don't particularly feel the need to discuss them right now.
Your sisters, then? Hob acquiesces easily. You said you have three? Dream looks into his glass.
Death is the eldest. Despair is miserable. She and Desire are twins. Delirium is herself. She changes faster than the winds on one of her better days. I haven't seen her in many years now.
They sound, lovely is not the right word here, like sisters, Hub finishes lamely. Dream hums in agreement, staring into his glass.
Do you have sisters?
Dream asks after a moment. Hob frowns.
I think so. Three that I remember. There might have been more that died young. I remember Mathilde and Beth and Gwendolyn. Mathilde fell in love with every travelling merchant. Beth was a spoil sport, and Gwendolyn was good at killing rats. I don't remember much other than that, I'm afraid. I think I lost track of their last descendants some 100 years ago now.
Dream looks solemn.
I am sorry for your loss, Hobgadling.
Hob laughs. Everyone dies eventually, Dream. It's best to treasure the moments while they last. There's plenty left to live for. All one has to do is find it.
Dream blinks slowly. You are a fascinating human, Hobgadling. How is it after all these years you still do not wish to die?
He snorts. Every time we return to this question, it's because humans are amazing. You turn your back for half a decade and they've invented, I don't know, aeroplanes and the Taj Mahal. There's so many new things, man.
Dream rests his head on his hands. What else has been invented in the century I've been gone?
Hob starts slowly, dragging out the word as he thinks. Seatbelts. You know how much it sucked to get into car crash before seatbelts?
I do not.
Oh, well, it's awful. All these bits get in you and it's just all around nasty. But seatbelts come along and you get off with maybe a few broken bones and some whiplash. It's so much easier to recover. And we've gone to the moon now, and I think we're heading for Mars yet. I never would have imagined it'd be so much.
Hob can see Dream beginning to nod off as Hob speaks, what must be alcohol and general tiredness seeping in. At some point, they migrate to Hob's room and sprawl out like cats on Hob's bed.
You should stay, Hob says, staring at the ceiling so he doesn't make eye contact with Dream and make an utter fool of himself.
What?
I mean, Hob can feel his face burning as he struggles to get the right words.
Not just tonight. Like, every week, or more.
I mean, if that's okay with you, and you don't have, like, a super important world-ending thing elsewhere.
Dream pops himself up, not quite looking Hob right in the eyes. He, too, seems to be flushed instead of his regular vampiric look.
That is an arrangement I would not be particularly averse to.
Good. And almost as an afterthought, Hob places the fidget cube into Dream's hand.
Keep it. I've got plenty.
Hob has the most wicked hangover in the morning, scowling at Dream, who used whatever magic he has to stay perfectly fine. In exchange, Dream, true to his word, shows up 1 week later with Matthew on his shoulder. There's a woman in the new inn that nobody but Hob can see. He checks with Murray 2.0, who tells him either Hob's seeing shit, or it's a witch. Good lad, that Murray, if not a little predisposed towards assuming everything was witchcraft-related. He also isn't entirely wrong in Hob's case, which is why it helps to keep Murray around. Hob sits down with two mimosas in hand. You after a drink? She smiles at him, and Hob feels a shiver go down his spine.
No. I just wanted to meet my brother's friend. I'll take one if you're offering, though.
Ah, fuck. He gives her one of the mimosas as a peace offering, despite the fact it's 3 PM.
Brother.
Dream, of course. You know, tall, dark clothes, terrible at jokes. Hob cracks a slight smile at that.
I might have heard of him. Can't really see the resemblance, though.
She laughs at that. He's not very talkative compared to the rest of us. I wanted to come meet you properly this time. It's not often my brother becomes so taken with someone.
There's a lot to unpack there.
This time.
Oh, don't worry. It's been about 600 years since you and I have associated. This mimosa is lovely, by the way.
That's nice, Hob says, not entirely registering what she's saying.
It is not nice. He is freaking out. His brain is blue-screening like a computer after you throw it in a deep fryer.
Then, because the immortality and the martini that Marie definitely added extra alcohol to have gotten to him, he says,
So how come you didn't come save Dream?
How come you didn't?
They stare at each other until Hob's eyes start watering, neither breaking each other's gaze.
I will wrench a pipe out of the walls and beat you with it if you try to hurt Dream, neither of them say.
It's all in the eyes.
Dream's sister finally beams after a long, long moment of intense eye contact.
I like you very much, Hob Gadling. You're good for my little brother.
Thank you.
Almost a shame you won't be one of mine. Until next time, then. Thank you for the drinks.
What?
I met your sister today, Hob says when Dream crawls into bed that night.
Which one?
Perm. Smiley. Seems like someone entirely unrelated to you. Way scarier than she tries to seem.
Death, then.
Hob does not choke. He does not. Perhaps he makes a polite gasp. Dream, who is awful, is doing that crooked, almost smile of his that, for anyone else, would be roaring laughter.
You're a bastard, he mutters into Dream's chest. A complete and utter bastard.
He gets nothing but a muffled huff that has Hob half-heartedly thwacking Dream on the side.
When he wakes up to all his blankets stolen and a dark hair in his mouth, he says nothing, because the sight of Dream cocooned in Hob's comforter whilst the morning light shines down on him is worth all the stolen blankets in the universe.
The next visitor is far less polite and far more colorful. They're also trying to seduce Murray II, who seems very unimpressed by their efforts.
All right, Hob sighs, interrupting whatever rapport the two might be building up. Let me guess. You're looking for your brother.
The stranger doesn't look surprised at all, leaving Hob slightly miffed. Then again, they're presumably on the same level of being as whatever Dream is, and Dream definitely has some form of omnipotence, whether the man will admit to it or not. So Hob's not exactly at an advantage here. They smile, all teeth.
Actually, Hob Gadling, I was looking for you.
Me? Really?
Oh, yes. My older brother's pet project. I know all about you, Hob Gadling, and your little desires, and what wicked things you wish to do to my brother.
They laugh after that, and Hob doesn't even have the energy to care about the fact that they clearly know about every detail of Hob's recent intimate life, or lack thereof.
So which one are you? Hob asks dryly. Invasion of privacy? Is that an option?
Desire
purrs, getting about 5 feet too close into Hob's personal space bubble.
Has my brother told you about me, Hob Gadling? About what it is I do?
Hob's somewhere between grimly amused and wondering whether Dream is about to show up in a thunderclap of eyeshadow and black.
Yeah? Dream's told me about you.
Really?
Desire hums. And yeah, Hob can kind of see the family resemblance now.
What has my dear brother been saying about me?
Oh, you know, Hob says vaguely. This and that. Something along the lines of getting him imprisoned.
They giggle and grin at him. Is he still on about that? Old news, I assure you. What has it been now? A few weeks? Hob grins right back. Something like that. Say, you know what else tends to last a few weeks?
What?
This bruise I'm about to give you, Hob says, and punches them in the face. Dream stares at Hob's twin black eyes and scratches decorating most of his face.
What happened?
Got in a fight with your sibling, Hob says cheerily as Dream continues to stand there in wordless bewilderment. You know, the one that got you locked in the basement? At least I hope I got the wrong one. Be a bit awkward if I went to all that trouble and it was the wrong sibling, you know?
Golden hair, golden eyes, pale hair, most likely tried to seduce you.
Yes, yes, and they went for Murray instead.
Then it was the right sibling.
Hob yawned, jaw popping awkwardly back into place. Dream watches somewhere between fascinated and horrified.
Did they hurt you severely?
Nah.
Though let me tell you, it was pretty evenly matched. Do you all tend to go for the bulls? Dream shifted uncomfortably.
The Endless don't fight like that. It's undignified. Sparring has rules.
Hob stares at him blankly.
Good thing I'm not Endless then, because I smashed a bottle of $8 tequila over the head. I don't even know why we have $8 tequila, considering the Murrays refuse to purchase perfectly good fine wines all the time. Toss me that ice pack there, will you?
You what?
Hob waves him off. Don't worry, they got me back. Poor Murray, though. Thought the lad was going to faint at the sight. Young love. Dream finally passes Hob the ice pack, all the while staring at him like he's a madman. Which is fair, but still. It's not like it's Hob's first bar fight with an immortal. You need to get out more, Hob says after a moment, which is partially true and partially might be the concussion talking.
No,
Dream says, eyeing the sizable bruise making itself known over Hob's right side.
I really don't think I do.
When Hob dreams, he doesn't tend to be alone anymore. He's on an airfield watching fighter jets dip and spin in the air. Hello, old friend, Hob calls to the wind. It rushes around him, coalescing into his long-limbed companion. Dream looks unimpressed.
I do have duties here, Hob. I cannot always be at your beck and call.
Well, I figured if you were truly busy, you wouldn't come in the first place. Dream rolls his eyes, watching the planes weave around each other. He's quiet as they watch, even by Dream's regular standards.
So, says Hob, what's on your mind,
I should tell you, Dream says slowly, about my time away.
Hob shrugs. Is that what you want to do? Because you shouldn't have to tell me if you're only doing it for, I don't know, self-flagellating reasons.
Self-flagellating what?
You know, the whole... Hob makes a vague whipping motion. I repent through suffering or whatever. Most of the time it didn't work, he added pointedly, squinting at Dream with a recriminating look that explained exactly what Hob thought of the practice. Just gave the poor blighters a nasty infection on top of everything else they had going on.
I really wasn't planning in partaking in that particular activity, no. How in the stars do you ever think of such things?
Hob shrugs. I substituted for Nicolette's history class yesterday. Imaginative little ponces, the lot of them. The things they come up with.
Children do tend to be very imaginative,
Dream says dryly. You actually want to tell me this? Because you don't have to if you don't want.
No, Dream says. I think. I believe if I don't tell anyone, I may go mad.
Hob nudges him, a silent encouragement. Dream looks into the distance, some part of him seeing something very far away as he speaks.
It was a ritual to summon my sister. The man had lost his son and wished to command death to bring him back. When he got me instead, he settled for immortality or riches. I refused to give him either. They'd stripped me of my tools and encased me within a binding circle so I was powerless. When his second son later succeeded him, the boy asked for immortality for him and his lover. I refused and remained in my prison until a few weeks ago.
Who?
Dream exhales shakily. Roderick Burgess, and later his son Alexander. Rest assured, I took my revenge.
Fuck. Fuck. Fuck! Hob had known of Roderick Burgess, the old man who had the devil in his basement.
You what he had in his basement, Hob breathes, horrified.
What?
Hob shook his head, scrubbing at the tears that stubbornly keep appearing.
I'd heard rumors that he'd gone mad and started a cult, that he'd trapped some supernatural being in that manner of his. Figured he'd managed to summon some demon at best and a Constantine at worst. I never imagined that it was you.
It wasn't your fault, Dream says. What could you have done?
I could have gotten you out sooner if I'd just looked harder. I could have done so much more.
You didn't know, Dream says sharply. My captors were particularly tight-lipped about my presence when it came to outsiders. That you'd even heard it all was more than I'd imagined. I do not blame you, Hob. It was my own pride that kept me there.
What do you mean?
All I had to do was ask one of my siblings to free me. I never did. We are not allowed to interfere with each other's domains without explicit permission.
They could have also... Fuck! They could have just, you know, shown up and helped a little. Not even directly. Why do you have to be the one to reach out?
Dream stares at him. It's not their job to monitor my every action. If I make a mistake, it is mine to rectify.
100 years!
I missed you, Hob says a little brokenly. Every day, practically. Cursed your name about as often, though, when I was starting up the pub. Insurance was a beast to figure out.
Dream peers at him, the closest to surprised Hob's ever seen him.
You missed me.
Hob snorts, refusing to tear up.
Of course I did. I wouldn't go around starting a whole pub for just any old immortal godlike being.
You, Dream breathes, looking at Hob with something neither can quite name,
are the most beautiful of miracles, Hob Gatling.
His eyes are like twin stars seeing right through Hob towards the core of what he is.
I could say the same for you, Dream of the Endless. Can I kiss you?
Hob asks, mouth dry.
Dream looks at him with the smallest of smiles. You may.
And Hob does.
So, Hob says, staring at Dream when he shows up in Hob's flat the next day. I really hope that was real last night, or else this is going to be very awkward for at least one of us.
Dream stares back.
How real do you want it to be?
Hob swallows dryly.
Very.
Dream steps inside, and Hob closes the door after him. It's good Hob couldn't think of anything to say, because the minute he turns and realizes Dream is wearing a very deep V-neck shirt, his thoughts all flee his brain.
May I kiss you, Hob?
Hob holds his composure well, by which he means he is seconds away from melting into a puddle of ooze.
Yes.
He chokes out, unable to look away from the span of pale skin that makes up Dream's chest. There's a few freckles, even, something Hob had never expected to see. Then he is distracted by Dream, who is right there, and very close, and oh, so lovely. The rest of the V-neck, along with Hob's button-up, are gone within minutes.
You,
Dream purrs between desperate kisses, all along limbs and lithe muscles,
are mine, Hob Gatling.
It'd be much more intimidating if it weren't for the slight flush spreading across Dream's face and nape, and the fact that he and Hob are definitely shirtless. Hob whirls him around and presses him up against the wall.
You know how long I've had to wait for this, you bastard.
He nips at Dream's collarbone, delighting in the shivers he gets in return.
Do you want this?
Dream breathes against Hob's neck. Hob thinks of sunlight-laced cheeks and pointed elbows and says,
Fuck yes,
and kisses the man beneath him like there's no tomorrow. Dream, for his part, makes a high little reedy sound and melts into Hob's touch, pushing back desperately as he threads its hand through Hob's shoulder-length hair. It should be awkward, since Dream is so much taller and neither have had much experience lately, but they fall together.
Bedroom?
Hob would be perfectly fine bending Dream over right here and fucking him into the kitchen bench, but a man has to have some decorum after hundreds of years.
Bedroom,
Dream confirms with a wicked glint to his eye, and Hob whisks him away into the night. This time Hob doesn't need a guide to find Dream. He turns past an alleyway towards a manor, to a basement he knows quite well by night.
Hey there, handsome.
Dream, Hob says, smiling as he crouches down next to the glass orb.
What about you and I get out of here, hmm?
Dream huffs a laugh out and appears at Hob's side somewhere in between one instant and the next. Hob wordlessly hands him the coat he'd been wearing, a proper nice one back from somewhere in the late 1940s, as Dream unfolds to his full height. A wordless nod communicates Dream's thanks.
Is this your dream or mine? Hob asks.
Dream looks at him, a sharpness to him just unnatural enough to be jarring.
Both, I suppose.
Excellent,
Hob says grimly, hefting a sledgehammer out of nowhere.
You can have the first hit.
Dream stares at the prison, a shine of something other reflected in both the globe and his eyes. There's stars and supernovas in the dreamer's eyes. For a moment it seems all there is Dream and this facsimile of suffering. And then Dream takes the sledgehammer and slams it into the side of the spherical jail, on a panel just below eye level, and does it again, and again, and again, until spider-webbing cracks trail across the entire sphere. Hob stands back and watches as Dream heaves the sledgehammer into the prison until the globe shatters, in an instant imploding into itself. The metal crumples with it, warping and curling inwards until all that remains is a mess of twisted metal and shapeless glass inside a gold sigil that they watch flake away like ash to dust. Dream slowly sinks down to his knees, arms wrapping around himself.
It's gone, Hob, he breathes. I finished it.
Hob sits down beside him, wordlessly tucking the taller being to his side. They sit and watch as light begins to pierce the darkness of the basement, and green foliage begins to creep through the cracks and make itself home along the floorboards. A play-by-play of what would have taken hundreds of years happens in minutes, or hours, or days. Time isn't really the same in Dreamer's realm. Mother Nature returning to reclaim lost territory. Hob and Dream sit, the only two things untouched by dirt and time.
I'm ready to leave, Dream finally says after watching dandelions obscure the last edges of where the prison once stood.
Hob clambers to his feet, holding out a hand to pull Dream up after him. There's no words, not until Hob and Dream ascend from the basement into a mansion similarly dilapidated before finally stepping onto the street, where everything looks as it should. The new inn stands before them in all her glory, grass that taken years to sow properly brushing their shins as they walk. When they walk in, a mixture of the new and old interior of the inn lies before them, scenes from every century they'd met and intertwining throughout. Friends whose faces Hob had forgotten over the years clink glasses with each other. Both Murrays tend the bar. They sit in comfortable silence, tucked away in the back corner where Hob marks his work. The people surrounding them slowly fade until it's just the two of them sitting side by side.
Do you ever wish to renege on our deal?
Dream asks abruptly. Hob doesn't hesitate.
Oh, plenty of times. I've seen terrible things, Dream. And beautiful things, too. Being a soldier does that for you. But it does get better. Sometimes it takes 10 years. Or 100. But it gets better. Or worse, and then better.
Do you think?
Dream swallows, hope scrawled across his face, in way more open than Hob has ever seen before.
Do you think that may hold true for others? Do you think it will ever get better for me?
Hob knocks his shoulder against Dream's.
Course it will. Last I've heard, certain people have been doing better already. Plus, they've acquired a rather handsome partner, if I do say so myself.
That earns him the briefest of smiles before Dream sighs.
This. The dreaming is my kingdom, Hob. All of it, every dreamer, is my responsibility. I have many duties here. There may be some nights where I cannot join you. Will you be all right?
Hob grins at him. Made it 600 years so far. His expression softens.
Seriously, though, it is all right. Just don't leave me too long, will you?
Dream looks at him, equally unguarded.
I will endeavor not to do so, Hob. I am not the easiest of partners, but if you ever do need me and I am not there, call for me. I will come.
Then that is all I will ask for. Well, that and for you to mark some of my papers for me.
Dream hums. Through the window of the new inn there lays endless greenery, fields of wildflowers and grass alike. It's beautiful. Almost as beautiful as its creator, who has been steadily leaning more and more into Hob as the night takes its course.
What happens when you sleep in a dream? Hob asks.
Dream tucks himself around Hob a little more.
You wake up.
Will you be there?
For as long as you'll have me.
Then I'll rest easy, knowing you'll be there to greet me when I wake.
Hob can feel Dream smiling into him.
Are you a romantic, Hob Gadling?
Hob snorts. I suppose I must be, to have stayed in love with life.
Perhaps. Dream's breathing begins to even out. Perhaps there is some benefit to your naivety.
Hob adjusts slightly to press a kiss to Dream's brow.
You're more than welcome to join me in it.
They watch the sun crest over the rolling hills of Fiddler's Green through the window of the new inn, and delight in the simple love that comes with living.
It's not perfect. There's days, weeks, months they sometimes go without seeing each other. Hob knows Dream thinks he's over his time imprisoned, but Hob still instructs Murray 2.0 not to have snow globes anywhere near the new inn at any point in time. There's fights, bad ones, the ones that know just where to hit and where to hurt. And there's the quietness of peace and love and knowing that even though someday this will all come to an end, they are at least together for now.
Are you happy? Hob asks one day when Dream sits barefoot in their kitchen while Hob grades his year 9's papers. There's a quiet peace to the deity that Hob hadn't known until recently.
Yes, Dream says after a moment. I do believe I am.
Good, Hob smiles, pressing a chaste kiss to the man's cheek as he leans over to grab another green pen. He'd swear by it to his, well, not his deathbed, that red made his kids freak out.
Because my hand's getting cramped from marking, and I know for a fact that you can fake my handwriting.
Dream grins at him and flicks him the bird. Murray 2.0 is an awful influence. And Hob laughs, for as long as they both have together and apart, that is more than enough. The end.
Notes. This is my baby. My longest consistent fic ever written. Treat her kindly. I.e., I'll cry if anyone says anything mean. Originally, this fic was called, Fellas, is it gay to kiss the homies goodnight? And for each comment, my cat gets one kiss.